Justin, what are we doing for the first time ever?
For the first time in all history, an intentional fatherhood retreat is happening.
And it's happening in Costa Mesa, February 19th through 21st. And the coolest part about this is that you're all invited. Every single father and man you know, invite them out. It's going to be a great time. What can people expect?
It is going to be fun.
Yes.
First of all, there's going to be a ton of talks and teaching on spiritual and physical formation and fatherhood.
Sir.
We're going to do curated times to hang out with other dads who are seeking Jesus, just like you are. And honestly, it's just a chance to get away, which is one of the things that is the most important for dads in this stage of life, to get away and reflect on where life is headed and how they're walking with Jesus in it.
Yes. Couldn't have said it better. So join us in Costa Mesa, California, February 19th through 21st, and check out early bird pricing. That's a big deal. It's happening right now. Go to intentionalfatherhood.org to check that all out, or you can check us out on social. But come, we can't wait to see you in February.
We want to meet you in person. Please come.
Welcome to the Intentional Fatherhood Podcast, where we give you a strong biblical framework and lots of practical ideas on how to live intentionally as a father and a husband. I'm Brooke Moser.
And I'm Justin Whitmore Early, and we're your hosts to guide you through the many roles and challenges that God is calling you to live intentionally as a father. We're following a visual framework that you can check out at intentionalfatherhood.org, and it's going to help you break down fatherhood into 8 callings.
And in each one, we're going to talk about how God made you to be a father and what practical habits you can start trying today in order to live intentionally into that call.
So come along with us as we follow Jesus on this journey towards being more intentional fathers.
Welcome back to the Intentional Fatherhood Podcast. We are laughing for so many reasons. We have a lot of fun doing these things.
We do.
You're going to have to push that microphone just a little closer because people are going to want to hear what you said.
Yeah, I'm new at this.
There you go. No, you're not. You're good. I just knew that we were laughing. Season two, episode two. If you tuned into season one, thank you. And if you listened to episode one, thank you. And hopefully that will give some framework, because what we're going to talk about today is really launching off of a lot of that foundation. So we're going to get into that. Also want to say thank you to everyone who's rated, subscribed, and left a comment. So helpful. And we would just encourage you, if this has been helpful at all, could you just take 5 seconds and do that? Because I mean,
do it, y'all. Hey, here's how to think about it. It costs you nothing and it gives the episode to somebody else.
Yes. It helps in a huge way. So do that. You can go over to YouTube, subscribe there. That's always very helpful as well if you want to watch the content. We have different shorts and different long form video there that you can check out. And then also just two more housekeeping things. If you have questions from this season specifically, simply send a 1-minute voice memo, your first name, last name, and where you're from, and leave that there. Send that to hello@intentionalfatherhood.org, and we would love to respond to that. And respond to your questions.
We love your voice memos. It's so fun.
They're fun to listen to.
It's fun hearing different people's accents from around the country and around the world. It's fun to hear how many different places people tune in from.
It's
so good to hear the real-time feedback questions, which, as you know, we give answers to in real time.
Yeah. And I can't wait to get into responding to some of season one, which we're going to do soon. But wanted to just say thank you for everyone that's done that. And make sure that if you haven't had a chance to do that. Also, one more detail. We released a PDF on the website, intentionalfatherhood.org, the age chart. So go check that out. That will make sense if you've listened to the last episode. If you haven't, let that be a curiosity to listen to the last episode. And the age chart's just helpful as we're talking about this next topic. But Justin, maybe just for everyone listening, if they haven't maybe been able to engage in episode one, let them know where we're kind of launching from for today.
Yeah, we have a framework. This is a thing for us, diagrams, frameworks. So you probably saw the one we did for season one on the website. Season two is we are thinking about the stages of fatherhood in time. Mm-hmm. Seasons of formation, seasons of discipleship. 3 stages we're diving into: getting your life together, then giving your life away, and then giving your death away. And it's so helpful because this helps you see, where am I in this journey, in this pilgrim journey of being a father, of being a disciple of Jesus? And a lot of your getting your life together is going to be your early stage of life. But no, lots of us are still working on many areas. Of getting our life together. Then the second stage, which we're going to dive into in the next episode, we're still kind of hanging out in getting your life together. But then we're going to dive into the stage of giving your life away, which is that great realization of what it actually means to be a disciple of Jesus, a father, mm-hmm. a servant, is that it is all given to you in order to give away. And then the third stage we'll talk about in episodes 5 and 6 about giving your death away, leaving yeah. a legacy, starting to think yeah. long-term about your life. But here mm-hmm. we are in episode 2 of season 2. We're going to drill more down into getting your life together.
Yeah. And we want to get really practical through story and through things we're doing now, because there's nothing worse than talking about these ideas and not knowing how it actually plays out in real time. Before I ask you the question, I'd like you to start with a story. Bucky's hat. I'm laughing.
You're watching on YouTube right yeah. now. The Bucky's hat.
Dude, for everyone on the East Coast, like Midwest all the way over the East Coast, they're loving this, because we don't have this. Like on the West Coast, dude, we don't have Bucky's.
And this is showing that season 2 is in Virginia. Yeah, like, we're here on the East Coast now. Here's Bucky's.
You'll see it all over social media. People are like, I'm going to Bucky's. Like they're going to Disneyland. I'm like,
it's a wild place.
I've not yet been. I'm kind of sad. I have not yet had a chance to. But next time I'm traveling and I see one, I drive by one, I'm like, no matter what's happening, no matter what the schedule is, we're stopping.
I know you're asking it right now. But no, we're not sponsored by Bucky's, but we're open to it. Yeah, but we're open to
it. So if anyone's listening and works for corporate, would you please let them know? We're so happy to support. Let's talk about, I want to ask you a very specific question, almost interview style. What did it look like for you to start getting your life together? Give me some stories. Give me some real grit.
Oh man, this is kind of fun, because people who know me now, read my books now, they're like, okay, he's a corporate lawyer, mm-hmm. Which by the way means I write contracts. I help buy and sell businesses, write these long contracts that govern bigger commercial transactions. Corporate lawyer who writes books on spirituality and habit. Mm-hmm. So you're probably, most people guess, like, a really type A guy, really organized guy, really, mm-hmm. but no. And anybody who would know me in college laughs now, because I was so different. My life yeah. in college at UVA was marked by not wearing shoes. I generally traveled barefoot.
Dude, were you that guy that was like,
I was that guy.
Like, you know how many diseases you can catch from your feet alone?
No, dude, your feet get rapidly adapt to walking outside. They're fine.
It's actually just the discomfort of seeing someone else wear shoes in public. That's all it is. Like, anytime you can see someone else's toes in certain settings, you're like, I don't know if I trust them.
I don't recommend it for your reputation, but I was generally barefoot in college.
Okay.
I didn't have a computer or a cell phone for a lot of college. So I was like, partly just disorganized.
Really?
Partly just my computer got stolen after my first year of college, and it took me a year to replace it.
Okay.
I didn't have a cell phone, because that actually wasn't really a thing when I was in, necessarily. Like, some of my friends had cell phones, but not everybody. And I was like the community guy. Like, I was always hanging out, always with the boys, having fun. I'm wiggling my hand right now. Like, I'm fairly gifted academically. Like, it's easy for me to do pretty well without trying too hard.
Yeah.
So for better or for worse, I could do okay.
Yeah.
I didn't do great in college, because I basically majored in community, which was great. I learned to live with my brothers in Christ. But if you had looked at my life then, it was a guy that was beginning to learn to be a disciple of Jesus, but not one that would know how to be a husband, not one that would know how to earn an income to provide for a family, not one that would be ready to have kids. There's so much I see now in my college self that was really great beginnings of emotional maturity. But I didn't have my life together. So I thought when I was going to graduate college, I was either going to continue to play with my like punk emo core band that I was in then, called Crash Everest. So we share, many listeners will forget, Brooke and I share the
there we go.
Yeah, high five. The legacy, you much more than me, of being a drummer.
Yes.
I thought that might be life, but I was really involved in my ministry, Campus Crusade for Christ, and now called Crew. Mm-hmm. And they had a missions partnership with East Asia, China. Mm-hmm. And I'd gone on a missions week there, and I really loved it. And here's the thing. My dad was a missionary for 2 years in the Philippines when he graduated college.
I didn't know that.
So I had in my head, this was before he went to law school. And I didn't know that I would go to law school then. I actually really didn't think I'd be a lawyer when I was in undergrad at UVA. So I had in my head that it would be a cool thing to do, to do missionary work for a season after college.
Yeah.
But I honestly didn't think about it that much. And it was getting towards a year and a half from graduating, and I didn't have a clue of what I was going to do. Some people were starting to politely ask, like, what are you going to do after college? I hadn't thought about it. You know, oh, wow. My life was not together. And then I had a super important summer experience. It was on a mission trip with crew. We do these missions trips. They're called summer projects, where you go to a city and you work the summer, do evangelism there. I was on one of these trips. And I had one of those afternoons that change your life, where the Lord works in your journaling and your prayer time. I was having a quiet time and I was writing in a notebook. And for some reason, I got a glimpse of my life to come. You know, kind of like doing the age chart, which, by the way, just another plug, if you didn't download the age chart and the diagram for this season and you didn't fill it out yet, you really should. Might even consider stopping the episode right now and going to do the age chart and then listening.
It's really fun. It's just insightful. Yeah. It's very helpful.
Because it helps so much to see your life in time. And this was one of those quiet times. I had this experience of the Lord prompting me for whatever reason. Brooke, I could not tell you why. I wrote down three things. I wrote, I want to be a father. I want to be a writer. And I think I want to be a missionary in China. And I remember not being sure about this, but I asked the Lord on this hill in San Diego this afternoon while journaling, Lord, call me to these things. Because I was like, if you're not in them, I don't want to do them. Which I think speaks to some of the ways that my emotional life was maturing. I knew that whatever I wanted to do after graduating, I wanted it to be following Jesus. And I'm suddenly remembering now as I talk about it, it was because I had just read the story of Peter walking out of the boat to join Jesus on the water.
Oh, yes.
And I was thinking about all these places of discomfort. Like, do I want to get married? Do I want to have kids? What is my profession going to be? And I was like, you know what? If Jesus is in it, then I'm going to be able to walk on water. Like, anything is going to be amazing if I'm listening to his call to say, get out of the boat, follow me, walk with me. And so I remember asking him, I was like, would you call me to these three things?
That's such a great, can we just pause on that for a second? Praying for God to call you is a really cool thing. And why I want to highlight that is because there's that wonderful scripture that says God will give you the desires of your heart.
Now, I love that.
And that's kind of tricky though, because we have to remember.
Think about the desires of your heart.
Yeah, there it is. So oftentimes we're talking about, remember, getting your life together. What is going on is disordered desire. Desire is disordered. So first prayer to that is usually just highlight getting your life together, but also just like what you're talking about is allowing God to reorder desire. God does give you the desires of your heart, but the ones that he's implanted there for their flourishing in you, the things that he wants to give you that maybe you don't even see yet, or maybe you have glimpses of.
Yeah.
And so just to maybe reinforce that for anyone listening, like, pray for God to call you to the things that you're passionate about. And maybe a metric to know, like, are these good things? Like,
yes.
The three things.
Like, are you in them?
Yeah. Like, think of the three things that you wanted to do. They were all to help other people.
Huh. I think you're right. I think you're right.
I could be wrong.
But I think, no, I know. That's interesting, because I think it's really important you pointed that out. I think you're right. But that makes me realize there's an important nuance to the story that everybody needs to know, is that I am now and was then a very selfish person.
Sure, sure, sure.
So I think what was so significant about that is that I was thinking, what is going to make my life fun? That's why I wanted to go tour with my emo core band. Sure. I was like, this would be more fun than trying to actually get a job. So it was unusual that I was asking the Lord to potentially call me to be a missionary in China. That was not something I thought would be cool necessarily to do. I thought it was something to be good to do.
Well, keep going.
And I was dating Lauren at the time. And like any man or young boy, like, I was very interested in sex. I was like,
sure,
you know, this was a huge, difficult to figure out desire in my life. But so most of my life was spent thinking about sex, as most men are most of the
especially
time.
Especially right before marriage. Particularly
in college and young 20s, but it doesn't really stop. But so it was kind of unique and interesting that I felt the Lord prompting me to ask him to call me to marriage. You know, this was a moment where the Holy Spirit was working. So I just wanted to note that Yes, they were selfless things, but that was because the Spirit was working.
And maybe to highlight, again, I appreciate the nuance. I want to be super clear that I think that doesn't mean it's not mixture, because nobody in the entire world, even now, and I'll speak for myself, but I know it's true because I know you too, your motives are not 100% pure and neither are mine, and they never will be.
They're all wildly mixed.
Side of heaven, they will never be 100% purest heart motives. Like, what are you talking about? Like, yes, we do desire to help people, but we also desire to care for our families, and we desire to actually do something with our lives. Mm-hmm. It's mixture. So I guess maybe to say, maybe a different way to say the same thing is that your desires were not selfish exclusively. They were not just for your benefit. Yeah. Were you going to be benefited by them? Sure. But I also think that God, when we're stepping in his design, there's not only benefit for others, but benefit for us. Amen. Like when you're walking in God's calling, the reason he's saying die to self is actually for your flourishing.
Yeah.
And it helps people. So yes. I just want to highlight some, because some people, you know, on the calling piece, it is truly almost a fully isolated desire just for selfishness. There isn't like a byproduct, maybe a fruit. And maybe that's just a way to measure it. And I would say, don't be legalistic about it. That's never helpful. But maybe just use this as a prompting to think about your own story. But I just wanted to point on that, because there's something there that asking God to give you his desires for your life and then praying those desires in, I think he's really excited about answering those prayers.
I think that's so good. And I think this is going to be something we're going to repeat throughout this episode and even season. If we're looking at our life with the perspective of a follower of Jesus, then we're asking the Lord to help us get our life together in order that we can give it away. Right?
There it is. There it is.
So I see now that the Holy Spirit was working in that moment because I was getting excited about getting my life together.
Mm.
But there was so many flaws and mixed motives about what I thought all of these things would be, right?
Mm.
And I saw that most clearly actually in my struggle to become a father. So my three things that I prayed for that afternoon was, call me to be a missionary in China, call me to be a writer, would you call me to be a father? And obviously fatherhood involves marriage. And I was dating Lauren. I loved so many things about Lauren at that time. I mean, she was in many ways like everything that I wanted. And I actually very early, I wasn't quite where you were. You shared last episode about Elizabeth, like, oh, I'm going to marry this girl. But I remember early on in Lauren seeing two things, this incredible vivaciousness, like hunger for life, which I was just so attracted to.
Yeah.
Not to mention also being attracted to
many
other things about her beauty. And again, my motives are mixed.
Yeah. Most of it is.
But she was just full of life. And I also saw that she genuinely loved Jesus and that that was going to be her life, that she was going to follow him.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking this hunger for life and hunger for the Lord, I want to be a part of this.
Yes.
So I was so attracted to her in so many ways, but I very quickly realized there were also a lot of other things I didn't like about her. There was also, we got into fights and she would bother me and I would bother her apparently. And there's all this friction. And I had Brooke, I don't know, like I was so well raised in so many ways by my parents, but I still have what most Americans have and what most guys think about marriage is that this woman should make me happy.
Mm-hmm.
And so when she doesn't, I'm like, well, then I don't want to be with you. Like, I'll go find somebody else. You know, this fundamental idea that if this isn't working for me, I'm going to leave.
Mm-hmm.
And I really struggled with that. So anytime we would have a fight, I would be like, okay, well, clearly this isn't marriage material because we have problems.
Yeah.
So I thought, ding, ding, ding. I thought problems were an impediment to marriage, not the heart of marriage. Yeah. Like why? But I really didn't. I won't tell it on this episode because it's so long, but we have a pretty epic breakup and get back together story. So I broke up with her.
You jerk.
I'll just give the quick highlights.
Yeah, I was just like, please.
We had like a 3-hour long conversation about breaking up. And it's in the middle of the night on our college campus. I'm about to walk home and I say goodbye. And she says, I love you. And it's the first time in our relationship she's ever said that.
Were you wearing shoes?
Probably not. Like almost certainly not. Anyway, she says, I love you. That's the last thing I heard from her as I'm breaking up with her. She never said that before. I fell apart. I spent like 2 months.
Oh my.
Yeah.
Keep going.
I spent 2 months realizing how bad life was without her.
Yeah.
And she wouldn't talk to me because she was like, we're not going to be friends. No, we're not going to be friends.
She's like, I can't do this.
You can date or marry me, but we're not just going to be buddies. So yeah, I came crawling back because I realized how much life is better with her than without her. But I still wasn't really sure. There were still so many problems we had. And then this is a long winding story, but I actually left to go to China.
Okay.
She's graduating. She's doing her fourth year at UVA. And I'm back and forth. Like, should we get married? Should we not? And then I just, one day, had a quiet time. There's a theme here, right? Spend time in the word and spend time in prayer. I was having a quiet time.
Yep.
Yes, in sir. Ephesians.
Okay.
I was reading Ephesians 5 on husbands and wives and Christ's love for the church. And I remember reading this line about, you know, husbands, love and serve your wives. Wash them with the water of the word. For this is a metaphor of Christ in the church. It's a great mystery. And I remember reading this passage. I'd read it a million times probably. But suddenly the Holy Spirit hit me in this reading that if we had to wash each other, help each other, serve each other, sacrifice for each other, this implied there were problems. There was sin. There was friction. Because as it turns out, in any relationship, particularly in marriage, there's two ingredients, a sinner and a sinner, coming together to be married. And that was going to create problems. And that was precisely the point. That you had to figure out how to love a sinner and be loved by a sinner. And that figuring out how to love in spite of sin and flaws and problems, how to forgive was the whole point. And I literally remember looking up from my Bible and journal and thinking, if I've got to marry a sinner, well, I sure would love to marry Lauren. She's my favorite sinner there is. There's a point to all this. And
a great line.
I went home the next month and proposed to her.
Whoa.
Yeah.
So you went from broke up for 2 months.
Well, okay. This story is hard to follow. I know.
It's okay.
In the spring, I broke up with her. 2 months not dating. We got back together. Then I graduated.
Wow.
We spent a summer dating and I left for China late summer.
Okay.
This epiphany moment happened in the winter of that year.
Okay.
So I went home for a trip midwinter and I proposed to Lauren on that trip home. And then I had to leave literally the next day after I proposed. I went back to China and we spent 5 months engaged overseas and I came home and got married.
That's disgusting. That would be so hard.
Actually amazing.
Well, actually probably great for your purity.
No, it was great.
Great for your purity. Hard for like the sense of like, man, you're like all of a sudden you're like,
well,
the biggest moment, you're gone.
It was great for purity. It was also great for the spiritual revelation of what marriage is.
Yeah.
Good. Wanting to be married to Lauren and her wanting to be married to me, but us being apart, being engaged, we realized we couldn't pretend that we were married. Yeah, we couldn't like hang out all the time and pretend that we were married. And I had to wait. I had to wait to go home and actually get married and consummate this wonderful thing called marriage.
Yeah.
And I've never realized how much this is a good metaphor for the kingdom of God. And engagement is like you're waiting for the wedding day, then waiting to marry Lauren overseas. Wow. It was actually incredible. But okay, here's why I shared all this story, because then I want to hear some of your story of growing up.
Yeah.
I realized early, I think it was at 20, you know, that I wanted to get my life together. The Lord was calling me to do stuff. So I wanted to be a missionary. I wanted to become a writer. I wanted to become a father. I needed to get married. But any one of those, and I just told the story about marriage. I'm just focusing on that one. I realized was going to require me dying to myself in order to do it.
Yeah.
And I thought getting my life together was about me accomplishing things. But the Lord was like, oh, no. You didn't realize I'm going to use all these things to invert you from the selfish life to realizing you're supposed to marry a sinner. And it's that fact of that difficulty that's going to make you more holy and more like me. And I could tell the story of how China did that. I could tell you the story of how writing has done that. I could tell you the story of how fatherhood has done that. But any of these grand callings that I was so desirous of in my early 20s, I the Lord slowly through that decade picked each one of them and said, yes, I'm calling you to get your life together here so you can give it away. And marriage was the first thing to do that for me. I want to hear about yours, but maybe you can ask questions.
I just have a couple thoughts and questions. I think that is really beautifully said. I love the story. It's very applicable to exactly what we're talking about. Giving your life away is a real challenge. And what we're talking about in order to get there is getting your life together. And, you know, as you were telling the story about not only just Lauren and you and where you guys were at, but just thinking through, you have your life that you're trying to get together, and it's really, it's just challenging and it's time consuming. So I just want to highlight for wherever you're at, you just said it was like 10 years, like, you know, you just a long time span. So I'm just highlighting maybe the first step for getting your life together is beginning to identify call. And just practically how to do that, just if anyone's here and like listening, like, how do I identify? Yeah. And for some, you're way past this. You've already heard this, but I'd say find trusted people that in mm-hmm. your life that know you and love you and will be honest with you. Mm, oh, that's the best. So good. They will tell you what you don't want to hear, who believe in you and love you. Ask them, like, what do you see me being gifted yeah. at, called at? And here's why I'll say this in my own story, because I think once we identify where we are called and we identify, you know, stepping into those things, that's when we're starting to get our life together. Yeah. But you need other people to help you find some of that.
Oh, and so badly.
Yeah. So bad. And for my story, I was my father-in-law again, man. He has been, you know, in many ways more of a father in this second half of life than my dad could be for lots of reasons. And he would always say to me, so I was a pastor for 18 years and I was in the pastoral lane of things. I helped plant a lot of churches, a handful of churches, and helped on key leadership positions of all churches. I've played every role in a church except lead pastor. So I've been on every team you could imagine. I've been on teaching teams. I've been on executive teams. I've done all the stuff. But because I'm a man and I wanted to climb a ladder, mm-hmm. mentally I was like, well, the next thing I need to do is obviously start a church or plant a church. And I remember my father-in-law would always, he believed in me so much, saw all my gifts and said, mm-hmm. I see all this in you. But anytime I would talk to him about this, he would just kind of get quiet. I was like, what the heck aren't you saying? Oh, like, what's going on? Like, do you not believe in me? And he just simply said a handful of times, he's like, I don't know. I think you could do it. I think you could do well at it. I just don't know if that's what you're supposed to do. And I was like,
planting a church specifically?
Planting a church and leading a church. And I was like, well, why? What? It just makes me feel like you don't believe in me. And he's like, I don't know. I just think you'll be way better at leading a nonprofit than you would be at like leading a church because your gifts and dynamics. He called this out years before I even ever thought of leading a nonprofit, being a part of it, never even wanted to do it. And he would always say things like, I think you'll be really good, like in a family ministry type thing. And I'm like, I don't want to be in the family ministry.
Wait, like at what age is he telling you this?
This is probably like 29, 30, 31, young enough to go, enough ego in there to be like, I don't want to be a family pastor. No offense to anyone who's a family pastor listening. I was like, you just know when you have visions of grandeur, it's hard to accept. Like, you want me to play a role of a family pastor on a staff that like, I just couldn't see myself in that
space. Was it
a
vision of grandeur for you to think about being the lead pastor planning a church? Was that like a
vision of grandeur is hard to say. I just mean like there is, it's mixture like we talked about.
Always.
So like I knew I wasn't I could follow, but I also knew I had a lot of leadership in my heart. Mm-hmm. And so it was hard for me to be like, is that going to be my whole life? Is always trying to fulfill someone else's vision. I feel like God's put vision in my heart. So I think it was that coupled with like, oh, I think climbing the ladder is leading a church.
Right, okay. So it was like the pinnacle maybe for this is what I should
again,
go
a
towards.
Lot of this, by the way, was so unspoken and unidentified at the time. Like ooh. For me, I wasn't like, I was just operating towards this.
All right.
It's only with looking in the rearview mirror, I've been like, this is what was happening. You know, I was operating.
Bookmark requests.
Yes.
I think a lot of this season and a lot of what we're going to talk about this episode is on naming those moments. Yes. So we need to talk about unspoken and unnamed later.
Yes.
Come to it.
Yeah. Well,
I'm bookmarking, but you're in the middle of your story.
So yeah, I'll share where my story really actually started in just a second. But I just want to say for anyone listening, I think it is listening to those around you because people were calling this out in me and I didn't see it. Mm-hmm. And I have a long story to tell you how I became a president of this ministry, intentional and all this stuff. But I'll just tell you this. It started with my father-in-law calling something out that I couldn't see.
Yes.
And then inviting me to help with this ministry, to work with him again in a part-time fashion where they could barely even pay me, where I worked still part-time at a church and part-time in this role. Mm-hmm. And I was needing in my early 30s to say yes to a call that I couldn't see the outcome of.
Yes.
It was pretty, the initial call was pretty unglamorous, not fun, divided in my attention, and not something I could see myself doing. Mm. It is over the last 5-6 years evolved to, I feel more called to this than any work I've ever done. I'm actually more wired this suits more who I actually am, not just who I thought I was, which is a really important distinction. And I had other people start calling that out of me when I couldn't see it. And it took a long time for me to get on board. All that to say, I think you need other people to help you listen to those people.
Oh, I was hoping you would underline that point, because I could give, and actually I will. There were three books in particular that really helped me
name them.
Get my life together. But I want to wait to name them for just a second, because sure. Far more than any one thing you can read, or far more than any one health influencer or financial influencer, whoever's trying to tell you how to get your life together. Mm. Like there's great wisdom and advice everywhere. But if you're not in the community of the people of God, you're not going to get your life together.
Yes.
Because you need that. You need a brother or an elder, a father, a discipler. You need someone else to come and speak into your life, because there's so much that you don't see. There's so much that I don't see. We cannot see our whole life. And that, and without vision, remember, the people perish. We need other people to help come in and say, I think you're actually not good at this, but you are really good at that.
Yes.
And so that, and I tell my sons, I actually told them last week at the dinner table, I said, when you leave this house, one of the things that I want to be second nature to you is you go find a church. Mm-hmm. You go find a church to root in, because you need the people of God.
Yeah.
So there were some good books that did help me, but they're second to that point. The Call by Oz Guinness was an extraordinarily helpful book that I read in my early 20s that got me thinking about asking the Lord to call me to something. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The Meaning of Marriage was a wonderful book by Tim Keller that it wasn't out when I had my marriage story with Lauren that I just shared, but I had been listening to his sermons on marriage, and that book is built on his sermon series. And that sermon series was part of why I started reading Ephesians differently, probably in retrospect. So The Meaning of Marriage. Then I read a wonderful little book actually just after I finished law school that really helped me get my life together in a second way. This was in my early 30s. It's called Designing Your Life. It's by two Stanford professors who do a whole, and it's, I think it's one of the most popular courses, or at least it was in undergrad at the time, a decade ago. They do a course on how to think about what you want to do in your life and what you're good at.
Mm.
So purely academic, non-spiritual advice, but it was so helpful to me to think about, what am I good at? What do I want to do? What do I long for? So The Call, Meaning of Marriage, Designing Your Life, all super helpful books and sort of thinking about getting your life together.
And why we mentioned books, I'm going to share some of my story real quick, and then we'll move to some practical, is why we say books is like the content of this season is coming through inspiration of our dear, not friend yet, but hopefully soon, Ronald Rollheiser. Like this
books
is-
Books change lives.
They change lives. And a lot of this is
and
some Rollheiser of his framework.
And Rollheiser has changed both of our lives.
Both of our lives. Yeah. And he's put this framework together in such a brilliant way. Now, obviously we're elaborating, changing words.
Yeah.
We're adding our own spin to all of it, but the core of it came from reading. And
Rollheiser is a wonderful author. His book, The Domestic Monastery, was a big influence in my book, Habits of the Household.
A huge. Yes.
And I've continued to love him. This Holy Longing, Sacred Fire.
Wrestling with God.
That's wrestling with God. I haven't read that one.
Prayer is my favorite.
But some people who are listening will recognize this, Get Your Life Together, Giving Your Life Away, Giving Your Death Away, which is a framework he names in his books.
Yeah.
And we were also joking, I think it was T.S. Eliot that said, good artists copy, great artists steal.
Yeah.
I'm sure he got it from somewhere too. We're elaborating on it. But
My favorite quote on genius is, being genius is simply knowing how to hide your sources.
Yeah, it's good.
Nothing new under the sun, Ecclesiastes.
Hat tip and word of thanks to Rollheiser for his writings. They've been good. Obviously, we believe in books. Like, books change lives, so go read.
We should interview Rollheiser. Let's see what we could do.
Hey,
if anyone has a connection, we might have one, but we got
to
get close.
If you're listening, Rollheiser, we want to talk to you. Okay, I shared my story. I said some things that were helpful for me. How would you describe the season of you getting your life together? Yeah. When was it and what happened?
So I'll be brief just because I want to get to some of the heart of this, but I just a couple bullet points that I think are important. I got married at 21. I shared in the last episode a lot of my father-in-law like encouraging me to go to college, that whole thing. And that was very helpful. That was like a one stage of getting my life together. But I got married at an age where I made the conscious decision with my wife that we were going to get married and grow up together. I knew even at 21, I don't know what this journey is going to be, but I'd rather do it with you than anybody else in the entire world. Right. Like, I don't know what it's going to be, but I pick you, I choose you, I love you, I'm in it. And we, about a year and a half in, literally were like, do you want to have kids? And we're like, yeah. And so we decided on our own that quickly to have children. Like,
wow.
It wasn't an accident. Like we have never accidentally gotten pregnant. It was always with purpose, and she always got pregnant too quick, which was a bummer for me because the trying stage was just so fun. And as any man knows, and you know,
I love that. It's so true, but I love so it.
You want to try it? Like,
you got pregnant too quick.
Yeah. I was like,
let's try more.
Yeah. Can we just, cause everything changes once they are pregnant, the hormone things. I don't know. You know, there's just a lot.
That's going to be our next episode. Yeah. Giving your life away, all the difficulties of marriage and young
giving
children.
Giving your life away. Yeah. Big time. So
giving your sex life away. Like, it's gone. It's gone.
I have so many things to say.
Let me keep, I know. Stay on, we'll get there. We'll get there. We promise. We're going to do a whole episode on sex.
I'm so worried about that episode. I'm going to keep going. So that said, I got married young, had my son at 23. So my getting my life together was, to not use intense language, but was thrust upon me. Like, I'm married now. Who am I going to be? I'm now a father. Now, I was also in ministry, and I have to say something about this. It was so helpful with getting my life together when people who did not have their life together came to me to ask how to get their life together. It was very motivating for me to go like, I don't know how to help you. Like, what, you know, meaning like I was given a position of responsibility and authority in a biblical public sense that forced me to have to mature in certain ways and figure stuff out. So my journey was a little different, where my vocation required a certain level of understanding, required a certain level of weekly Bible study, required a certain level of understanding the times, the cultural moment we're in, how the scriptures interact with that and how we apply that to our lives and why that changes who we are.
Mm-hmm.
All of that was actually very helpful for me in my getting my life together, because I went from like playing music, doing the whole like signing autographs, to like leading a middle school group. And that's the most humbling thing.
That's some whiplash.
When like 6 months prior, that whole middle school group and all their moms were at your show asking for, you know, autographs, and you're like, you know, leading 30 smelly kids to the way of Jesus. It will, you know, it's so humbling, and it's so exactly what needed to happen in my life. But I think my vocation coupled with marriage and parenting at an early age forced me to really begin to get my life together. And I would say that a lot of that was motivating. Mm-hmm. And I had a lot of then mentors, because I was in a position where I realized I had to have them. Some like my father-in-law, but others like, you know, my brother-in-law, John Mark, he's not only been a dear friend, he's a brother to me. And if you know any of his work, he's a pretty smart dude and he thinks a lot. Yeah. And he's been a dear friend who's shaped my life in all sorts. He's been a brother shaping my life for years. I mean, that impacts a person, right? So I had models and people that were like, and by God's grace, it wasn't my design. I had immediate access to that could help me in my journey and my questions that helped me get my life together. But when I was 29, I hit this wall, and this wall of realizing like, I have a lot of good spiritual mentors. I have people that can give me some pretty sound wisdom, but I'm not the man I want to be. I feel really stuck. I feel like I have procedural memory and patterns that I can't just undo. They're locked in. There's something that I can't get past. I can't be this with all my spirituality and praying. I can't become a better husband. I can't be a better father. I'm kind of stuck. And I realized
that this is late 20s. You're
29. Really, like, literally, it was exactly, you know, I remember the date. I remember when I started seeing my therapist. And for me, I, with a lot of humility, I went to go see a therapist, and I shared a little bit of this story, but I would say part of getting my life together to get to the next stage, to actually be able to give it away for me, because of my background, my experience, I needed to undo a lot of stuff that had been done. And it wasn't until I actually begun that journey that I could begin to understand and name, which we're going to talk about in a second, what was actually going on in my life, in my story. And it was really, it's interesting, because when you're talking about getting your life together, we might be able to reduce or think that it's in your 20s and 20s alone and not 30s.
And that it's all practical, it's just learning a job, learning. But
no,
I had to learn yourself.
I had to learn. I think there's some that are in the process of giving their life away, but still haven't gotten their life together. parts of you.
Let's name that really quick.
Yeah.
Because we're talking in these seasons, and we're going to have to emphasize over and over and over, they overlap.
A lot.
They overlap a lot. Because you're probably already learning to give your life away in some senses to your children, wife.
In part, yes.
Your kid would be six at the time. Yeah,
Duke would have
been six, right? Yep. You started therapy.
And then
but you're still realizing, we constantly as fathers wake up and realize, oh, here's a part of my life I don't have together. So,
yes.
So what made you think that therapy would be a good idea? I feel like so many people out there are thinking maybe they ought to, but something needs to spark them to get their life together and go get help.
I think if you're honest with yourself.
Most people aren't. So how did you start?
I was really uncomfortable in my own skin. I started with understanding that I had a vision, you know, Proverbs 29:18. I had a vision that I wanted to be a better man than I was. Mm-hmm. Wanted to be a better husband than I could be. Wanted to be a better father than I could be. And I had this sense like, I don't want to be this man forever. But all the things that I'm doing that everyone's told me to do in a theological sense has been done, and it's not changing me. Now
you can sort of see who you're becoming and you don't
like
it.
And I want to be clear, like, of course, yes, Jesus is the wonderful counselor. And he also uses others, as we've talked about ad nauseum, to help with that process. It is so important to bring others. So I realized my journey and story, because of my upbringing and my background and my trauma, I had to have somebody who was a specialist with therapy and theology to help me understand and unpack and undo the knots that have been tangled up in my soul.
That's so good.
Some people can come into adulthood and don't have that. And that's beautiful. I think the majority of people really do. Mm-hmm. And I think until you can have somebody who is spirit-filled and understanding and trained, has experience to help you understand and name your experience.
Yeah.
You are going to be often, at least this is my opinion, you'll be stuck. And I was stuck and I felt it. And, you know, just my life had these parts that just didn't make sense. Meaning like I knew who I wanted to be, but I couldn't be that. And so what do I do? And so I did, upon prompting of a friend, go to therapy. I started going to therapy. It was actually John Mark. He said, I have this therapist. I think you should talk to him.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. I was actually going to ask, probably a lot of people listening either need to or need permission to go find a good counselor or therapist to get over some part of their life where they realize that my life isn't together here.
Yeah.
How do you advise people to find a good one who follows Jesus, who knows the word, who is filled with good theology? Because there's a lot of bad things that can be done to you, because therapists are powerful, right?
Exactly.
So how do you find a good one?
Not all made the same.
Yeah.
They're not all made the same. So I would just say this, to identify what you're pointing out, a trusted person who I trusted, who knew me and loved me, gave me a suggestion and gave me permission. So that was huge.
That's
great. It was easier.
Props to John Mark for doing that. Yeah.
And then he gave me a number.
So he made it easy.
He made it easy.
A lot of people don't have it that easy. How do you go find one?
So I think I'm not going to go deep dive on this, but there are a lot of bad therapists. And I would say very clearly that you have to be so careful and be very picky about who you pick to pour into your life. Be picky about who you pick to pour into your life in every stage. I would say they have to be Jesus-centered. They have to have a framework. I would say somebody, if possible, it's not always possible. There are very gifted young therapists, but I think there's something to be said about life experience in the profession that you're in and having age, maturity, and understanding coupled with experience. I think there's a lot there that can help. I would say take the advice of somebody you trust. If you know somebody that's seeing a therapist and they can say, and they can vouch for them, go off of recommendations all day. The therapist I see, he will literally only take people that are recommended to him. So if I recommend anybody to him, he'll take them. But as an example, but like that's a lot of therapists, because they like, you know, that's how you find a good therapist. It's more word of mouth. It's not like broadcast. So I'd pray it through, and then I would just be open to try it. Try it. If it feels weird, it feels off, like test it. Why? And wait until you find the right one. And I would say pray it in. We have prayed in so many therapists, and we've had the most amazing therapists.
Oh, that's great.
Like, Jesus, who do you want me to see?
Praise God.
Part of the formation, you know, your formation. So I would say start there. That's not exhaustive by any means, but I would just say if you're here and you're like, where do I start? I was having a conversation with a guy that listens to the podcast who just started therapy, and he's like, I want to help fathers. And so we scheduled a call, you know, maybe a month ago. I haven't even told you about this. And he basically, long story short, was like asking how to reach fathers. I was like, dude, I don't know. I just got a lot of brokenness and I've been trying to figure out my own story in life. And I knew I should probably help fathers. I felt God put the call on my life, but I've been the most sheepish to do it because I feel the most disqualified because of my own life and story. And it was interesting talking to him. You know, he's in this line of work and he was asking these good questions, but I was like, in my heart, I'm like, I don't know, man, start with your brokenness. Just start there. Like we all need help.
Yeah.
Anyway, I think therapy has been a huge part of my story of getting my life together. Mm-hmm. And I'd say in the last 10 years, I've learned to understand my story, name my story, and it's helped me get my life together.
So we've said that word a couple of times and therapy basically helps you do this. What do you, let's say more about naming. What do you mean?
Oh yeah. I have a couple notes because I think it's just important to say things clearly. I think with our life, especially with our kids, and I want to highlight, this is for your own life, you as a man, father, and also for you to do for your kids, maybe even your spouse, depending upon the situation. But we have to name experiences properly. We have to know how to properly name things because not everything in your story or your life can be fixed or cured, but it can be named.
Mm-hmm.
So
can you say it one more time?
Not everything can be fixed or cured, but everything can be named. For example, you can name that there was a parent figure that didn't give you all that they could have. And that was really bad. And that was sad for you. And that's made your life harder in certain ways.
Wow.
And it's made you broken in certain ways. And they came from a hard space.
Mm-hmm.
And they probably tried as hard as they could. Maybe they didn't. But there's, you can name that experience. I didn't have the childhood I wished I did. Mm. I didn't have the experience I wished I did. And when we name something correctly, and this is where it's so important, it partly, we free ourselves from its dominance.
Yes.
It loses its power when you name that experience.
This is true for confession, right? When you name the sin, when you name your struggle, it's a huge part of getting the power out of it. Not all of it, but.
But I mean, when you think about totalitarian regimes, like why they fear artists and writers and religious people and prophets and journalists, it's because they name things.
Ooh.
They name them. They go, this is what's happening.
That is provocative. That's so true.
And that's one, it's so interesting when we think about the power of naming something. It has power in it. I mean, this is not just an idea. James.
Hey, could I jump in really quick? We actually talked about this last season, just to call back for people. Adam is given the power, the gift, the right to name the world, which of course God just spoke the world into existence, right? So God's words create reality.
Yes.
In a fundamentally different way than our words, but he also passed on that God-given capacity to name the world, create reality. He tells Adam to name the animals and then Eve joins him in that task because that's the moment, right? When Adam, when God says that, hey, you're actually lonely. You need a helper to do all this naming work, right? and I think about this all the time. You can read the biblical story in this lens, which is a very helpful lens of God creates the world through words. We're given the power to shape the world in words. We mess that up a lot. Jesus is the Word made flesh. He is the enfleshed Word that comes to fix everything. Mm-hmm. But this idea that to figure out what the world is, to name it, to shape it, is an image bearing capacity that we have.
Yes. What a beautiful add-on and clarifier. I love that. James Hillman says a symptom suffers most when it doesn't know where it belongs.
Mm. I like that.
Like we have symptoms from our life and when we don't know where to place it. And honestly, that was a lot of my life. It was like, I had all these symptoms, but I just didn't know, I couldn't name them and understand it. And so I think for me in my story, I'm going to talk about this with your kids really briefly, and then we'll give you some practical stuff. But where that was important for me was when I didn't name stuff and understand my story properly, I just made all these assumptions or, you know, half conclusions about stuff. And it just made my life and my brain specifically very chaotic.
Yeah.
And I couldn't order things, which means everything felt chaotic and conjumbled and hard to follow. And each painful, long, ongoing. I still go to therapy once or twice a month, if not more. Every single time, it is a faithful little chipping away of something and understanding it more. And it's only been in the scope of a decade for me. I'll be 40 this year. You're 40 now. I'm 40 December. I'll be 40 in December. It has been a whole decade. And I finally feel like, I can kind of see my story now. You name this stuff.
Get my life together.
And
a
that's
bit.
And that's not because this therapist's slow. It's because real change.
Real change
takes a very long time.
Yeah.
My therapist told me this, and he said, "Please give this to anybody that listens to you. Please tell them." So I pass this on behalf of one of my most beloved friends and people in the world. Real change takes a very long time. So if you are here and you're like, I've been doing the work. Keep doing the work. It takes a very long time to change really in a deep way. And why it's important to name things for yourself is because that helps you name things for your kids. And why you might go, why do I need to name stuff for my kids and what's happening? And like, it's important for us to explain reality to our kids. But when parents don't take responsibility for an action, say you blow up at your child, right? When you don't clarify, apologize, repair, when parents don't take responsibility, often what unfortunately happens is kids will. Right. They take responsibility. And when a child goes through something overwhelming, maybe that was caused by you or something in life, you know, that could be a bully at school. It could be a really hard situation that they're in. When a child goes through something overwhelming and the parent doesn't name it or label it, like, hey, that happened to you, or walk the child through how to experience it, something opens up called a narrative void. Mm-hmm. And this visual is so helpful.
That's a really helpful name in and of itself right there.
Go ahead, fill it in. Yeah, a narrative void opens up, which the child will fill often. They fill that void with and think, well, it's because of me.
Blame, right?
Yeah.
It's me. Yeah, blame myself.
I'm the one. Yeah. That happened because I did something or it's because I'm broken or whatever. So the why do you name stuff in yourself? Why do you need to know how to do that? Maybe you don't need therapy for that, but why do we need to learn to name stuff? Because when we start naming stuff in ourselves, we start to name it for our children. And if we do not do that for our children, it will keep them confused, frustrated, unintentionally agitated in their life because they are moving through the world, not understanding it. Mm-hmm. And so as a father, I think one of your best gifts you can give your kids is naming their experiences. We have a lot of complexities in our home with health in regards to our kids. One of the things I do so often is explaining my little girl, Birdie, hold up that drink.
Here it is. Coffee shop down the street from us. We love it.
We walk to this coffee shop and it's Birdie's. I almost tear up every time. I'm not kidding. Anytime I see these things, like I have a couple hats that have horses on them. I hate horses. Birdie freaking loves horses.
Oh.
And I mean, my AirPods have a little horse emoji on them. Not because I like it, because it reminds me of my girl every time.
That's amazing.
But Birdie has special needs and she has very challenging dynamics that come with her experience and her life. I'm learning how to name that for her, which is like so hard and painful. But I'm also most of the time I'm sorry to get emotional.
Please do.
I have to name that for my kids. Mm-hmm. And what's so hard for them is like how to understand like, why does she have to be that way? Or why is she act that way? Or why is she, you know, speaking that way to you guys? Why is she freaking out? And having to constantly go on a daily, hourly basis, well, that's because her brain doesn't work the same way as yours. It's because when she was little, she had a form of catastrophic epilepsy, which caused permanent brain damage. And her brain is not formed the same way yours is. All the things didn't connect that we're supposed to.
Yeah.
And she doesn't have the same access to the emotional abilities that you do.
Yeah.
And so she's going to say things and do things and she doesn't mean it the same way, but I know it feels the same way.
Wow.
And I'm so sorry. And I know that it's hard. And
man,
and I think at the end of the day, my son, he has a lot of autoimmune stuff. So does my wife. And he's like in a health flare right now. And like having to name for him, son, you're really sad that you don't feel well a lot of the time, that your body feels sick. And you feel like as a 16-year-old almost man that you shouldn't have to deal with this stuff. And I understand. And that sucks. Now I want to highlight, I am so far from a perfect father. And if you don't believe me, wait till we have Elizabeth on the show. She will give you details of the weekly ways I miss it. The daily ways I miss it, honestly. But I think that I can't live into fully who I want to be, but I have a vision and I'm slowly chipping away at getting there.
Man, I'm so glad you went down that path because we have some stuff about male initiation rituals, talking to your kids, helping them get their life together.
Mm.
But I think we should get there later, just bookmark it, because I think you've brought up something that probably should take up the rest of the space in this episode. And that is the idea that getting our life together often means healing from the pain of the past.
Yes.
And some of that is what has been done to us. Now, this is true also for how, and I just want to honor and thank you for sharing about your children, because I think people have enough pain on their own.
Yes.
Traumas or mental wounds, mental illnesses, you know, what you shared, autoimmune problems, health difficulties. Like a lot of people might be hearing this and be like, I can't get my life together because all these things are going wrong with my body. Mm. And then, but we experience it even more with our children when we see things going wrong with them and we worry, how are they going to get their life together? How are they going to grow up? And I just think it's such an important thing to name so we can give it over to the Lord.
Yes.
At the time of this recording, I've just finished work on a book project that's been so dear to me.
It'll be out by the time this season comes out. Yeah,
it's out now probably while you're listening to this. The Body Teaches the Soul. And so the excited. Thinking chapter was really important for me, thinking about brain and spirituality. Yes. And how do we take both really seriously? So the fundamental premise of the book is don't ignore your body, but don't idolize your body. Image God through your body. Mm. And I think about this paradigm a lot in terms of a garden, okay? You just said something really important a couple minutes ago that your therapist told you, change is so slow.
Real change.
Real change is so slow. Mm-hmm. And I've begun to think about it as in change happens at the pace of a garden.
Mm.
It's slow. Nothing that you're doing right now makes any difference.
For a long time.
What you're doing right now makes so much difference later. Mm. And the garden analogy actually became part of my governing image for the book, because I suddenly realized that to not ignore our bodies, and that means, by the way, health stuff, autoimmune stuff, it means neurological traumas of the past, mental traumas of the past, like all these things that we're now realizing. Something emotional was done to you, but now it's showing up physically.
Yes.
And vice versa. Something physical happened to you called a seizure, and now it's showing up emotionally. And this idea of not ignoring the body means we can't be Christians who pretend that we are spirits without bodies, because God didn't make us like that. Yes, so when we try to over-spiritualize our mental health issues or our food issues, it means we're ignoring that God intends us to get our life together by caring for our whole selves. That means body and spirit. Because we're a whole soul, we're a spiritualized body. And the garden analogy, I think, is a really helpful way for people to think about that. It's been really helpful for me.
Mm.
Because in a garden, if you ignore it, it will become either a jungle or a desert. Okay. Ooh. It will die, or it will grow so chaotically that nothing really can flourish in it. But if you idolize your work in a garden, you will be humbled really quickly, because there's things called weather and blight and drought.
Yes.
And by the way, your soil isn't the same as your neighbor's soil. And you're doing this and it worked for him over there or her over there, but it's not working for you here.
Yeah.
So you can't idolize your work in a garden. Like, your body is not the only thing that needs attention. So don't ignore it. You need to work.
Yeah.
But don't idolize it. You need to work over the long haul, labor faithfully. But imaging God in our body and bringing together mental shalom, mental health, physical shalom, physical health, is the idea that that's the original vocation we had, to be gardeners of Eden, and to say we're going to labor alongside God to create shalom and flourishing in the place that he's given us.
Yes.
That was originally the Garden of Eden. And now it's everything. It's our bodies. It's our jobs. It's our families. And I don't think we can properly talk about getting our life together without naming that a lot of our lives have fallen apart because of some mental issue or physical issue. But nonetheless, part of the good stewarding work that God has called you to is to garden your body, garden your family, garden your mind, garden your health, garden your job, labor faithfully alongside the master gardener named Jesus, who longs to bring your health, your body, your mind, your family, your marriage into shalom. That's a long, slow project, but it is so worth doing.
I love so much of that. And if you are listening, go get that book, because dude, I got to read it and I'm so excited. I got to endorse it. Thank you. That was fun.
Thank you for doing that.
Oh, don't thank me. It's really,
it was meaningful to me.
It's probably going to do for the sale of the book, but I'm happy to do, honored to do it is the right word. No, I mean, and especially that book, like I so believe like, this is where it's been so cool that I feel like you and I have been so aligned in so many different ways, just naturally. And so it's like, dude, that I could not support that book more because of how much rich theology is in it, but how you just practically connected all the parts. And I think a lot of guys gave feedback that some of the episode on physicality that we did last one, they loved that in so many ways. And I understand why. It was such a great conversation, but primarily from the book. So go get that. But I also want to maybe just, you know, as we're wrapping up today, I think getting your life together is really hard. And I know that some guys listening are like, you know, thinking, oh, where's the practical stuff? The practical stuff has been truly throughout this whole episode. Like, we can't jump into your life and tell you how to do it. Our generation lacks models. I know so many good-willed men that would do the thing. They just don't know what it looks like. Mm-hmm. So what we're trying to do in a kind of haphazard, not always clean way, is we're trying to just give you a model of what it could look like. These are our stories. Mm-hmm. So this is how it's looked for us. And I know that for you, it might look really different. But the best parents I know are people that have gotten their lives together. So if you're like wanting to parenting hack, you're missing this. You're missing the whole thing. You have to start with you. You have to start with your formation to Jesus. You have to start with your story. Now, obviously, there's certain things that we're going to talk about that are going to help that maybe you could try, right? But I also think that there are so many things that we miss when we don't actually just take the time to learn how to name our own stories and mm-hmm. get the help that we know. And man, if I could just speak to you, I'm so honored that you would trust us with your ears and your time. Time's a big deal. But there's some of you listening that are so stubborn and hard-hearted. And it's not because you're strong, it's because you're weak. And I want to say this to you with so much respect. The strongest thing you could do is admit your weakness and get help.
Amen.
The strongest thing. Strong men say, I can't do it. Strong men say, I don't know, please help me. If you do not take a moment to acknowledge that all those people giving you that feedback of like, you need to get help or you should, you know, yes. they're saying that not because they hate you, it's because they love you.
Yes.
And if that's your spouse saying that to you or someone else, can I just be a voice of someone who compassionately cares for you and very much wants to see any man listening or watching to thrive? Please know that the strongest thing you can do is get help. Whether that's a mentor, a therapist, a friend, begin the work. And that's going to start the process of getting your life together. And I know for Justin and I, we've given you some stuff like we like to read. You know, I think last we also talked about some of our favorite spiritual practices. And we can do more content on that for sure. But I think one that has helped me recently, and I'll just say this as far as giving your life away. You talk about this a lot, and I appreciate that you do, is this is body teaches the soul stuff. But like, how our physical posture affects our heart, you know, kneeling prayers, right? Yeah. Face down on the ground has been probably the best posture. It's like, how low can I get and how?
Well, really? Is that a common thing for you to pray face down?
It has been recently. And I'm telling you, I think it's going to be a consistent one.
Because, I love it. Yeah.
No, but it's really interesting for me. It's because everything's dark. It's because I can focus. It's because I feel like I pray differently. I feel like I pray humbly when I'm on the ground. Like, I don't know, man. There's just something about it. There's just something about it. And so I think just practically start there.
Yeah.
Start on the ground. Like, get your life together from the ground up. Start there.
That's a beautiful image. Get your life together from the ground up. If you feel undone, if you feel ashamed, if you feel confused, my life is not together. Starting in prayer is perfect. And kneeling or face down, even better.
Yeah.
And just to pick out, I know people are hungry for practicals, to pick out the practicals that were embedded in all our stories.
Yeah.
That started with prayer. Remember, a huge part of my story was journaling and praying, Lord, call me.
Yes.
Second big thing was reading. Read books about the areas of your life.
Yes.
If you want to read on calling, go read Ozginess' Call. If you want to read on, you know, becoming X or Y or Z, find a book on it. Be a reader.
Mm-hmm.
Stay in community. Mm-hmm. You're not going to figure out how to get your life together. You're not even going to see the gaps if you're not in a local church community, which, by the way, when I say stay in community, that means that presumes you are embedded in a transparent and vulnerable way to other men.
Yeah.
So if you're just attending church, great. Start attending the Bible study.
Yeah.
If you're just going to the Bible study, but you're not talking, great. Start sharing. Start being vulnerable.
Yeah.
You know, I often say just show up and speak up. Show up and speak up. So that's what I mean by community. Number four, practical. Get actual help. If you if you think I'm 35 and my life is stuck, be like Brooke. Go say, you know what? I need some counseling or therapy. Yeah. Find a counselor or therapist who loves Jesus and knows about the brain. And you know, that's a beautiful thing to do. And number five, practical thing. Be attendant to your health. Some of us are falling apart because you really do have mental health issues that need medical attention. Go get it.
Yes.
Some of you are falling apart because you are ignoring your body. You are not exercising. You're not eating right. You're literally trying to undo everything that the Lord has done in your body by giving you health, and you're trying to undo it. That's not getting your life together. You know, that's literally tearing it down. So be attentive to your health. And those are, pray, read, stay in community, get therapy, be attentive to your health. There are five practicals that you can embedded throughout this episode that you can now go try out.
This is a fun conversation. We should keep having these.
hey, I got an idea. Let's do a next one on giving your life away. Episode 3.
There it is. Episode 3. Let's talk about why we lay, you know, get our life together so we can begin to give it away. So yes, that's the tease. Come back. We'll be here next week giving your life away.
We'll see you there.